Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City 88.7 FM with Frances Nesbitt and Max Morrissey.
Hello and welcome to the Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City. I'm Frances Nesbitt and I'm joined as usual by Mags Morrissey. We're live today, Friday, and the show is repeated on Monday from 4 to 5.
We'd love to hear from you, so if you have any questions or comments on anything that you hear on the show today, the easiest way to get in touch this week is email kitchengarden@crkc.ie. That's email kitchengarden@crkc.ie. Another busy show this week. We're going to be joined shortly by Delia Lowry-Larkin from Noor Therapies, a herbal therapist. And before that, we're going to be talking to Greta McCarthy O'Brien all the way down on the Dingle Peninsula about growing herbs. So it's a herb-themed show this week. And Greta has an absolutely gorgeous book, which I have in studio here, that we can talk to her about on tips for growing herbs. Mags, how are you?
Good. Very good.
The weather showed significant improvement this week, didn't it?
Thank God. I think everybody was delighted. I even felt the bees had kind of an extra vigour with the sunshine. And it felt actually like the most beautiful, especially Sunday evening, the most beautiful sunshine few hours ever. So it was very nice. We needed it.
Absolutely.
Badly.
Absolutely. And as soon as that sunshine arrived last Sunday, it was amazing. Like everything just burst into life, you know, bees.
On Monday morning, I really noticed like the horse chestnuts were just starting to come out, and elderflowers and willow, the little catkins are on the willows, but it seemed almost instant. They were probably waiting for the sunshine, like us all.
Or maybe it was all progressing and we were just indoors out of the rain and we didn't notice it.
Well, I went weeding, well, not weeding, but I was kind of replanting a flower bed, and there were still buttercups had made their presence and had made an appearance during all of that weather. So
you're foe of
yes,
every year.
My foe indeed. Yes.
I did notice quite a few buttercups in a small amount of weeding I did as well. They seem, the cold or the wet doesn't seem to bother them at all.
No, they're going to survive well beyond all the rest of us.
And they're really, really tricky to get rid of. Like their roots are so pernicious, the smallest amount of it, and you have a new plant popping back up again. And
yeah, and I know I've said it before and stuff, but they always go down in my strawberry bed. Mm. They just, root just runs right beside the strawberry.
They have such similar growing habits to strawberries. I've always found them around the strawberries, and you know, the leaf isn't too dissimilar to them, you know.
No, not when they're like that at that stage and stuff. But you know, curiously, wood anemone and most beautiful flower, which is out at the moment, they're in the same family.
As the buttercup.
Yeah.
It's a very, very big family of plants.
Well, it must be because they don't look anything like them. Mm. Now, they do form carpets, and there was a magnificent carpet in Dysart at the weekend, which should last until up into May. So they have a nice flowering season, but they're just beautiful. Mm. They have lots of different names, if you know any of them, called windflower. Plant of the wind. And it's because their stems are quite flexible and they can move the flower head depending on, you know, with the wind. So, yeah.
So it's almost like a weather vane.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Wow.
But they're just beautiful. And beside that massive carpet, then there was carpets of wild garlic, which are just actually really about to produce their flowers, actually. So the last, I'd say, week of collecting leaves for making things.
And did you manage to gather any?
I did, yes. And I actually gathered them this morning. So I made soup with freshly gathered garlic leaves this morning.
Is that in the flask there?
Yes.
Oh,
yes,
wow.
I did.
Oh, so you brought in some for us to try.
I did.
Great,
indeed,
excellent.
Yes.
Oh, I look forward to that. Another flower that's in the buttercup family, as far as I remember, is the Lesser Celandine. And it's out in flower at the moment. And it's a beautiful yellow sun kind of shaped flower.
Yeah.
Absolutely gorgeous. And I love seeing it because it forms those carpets too in the little woodland garden out at Crowan and really
along
brightens it up.
Hedgerows.
Yes,
moment, yeah.
Yeah. Often see them along hedgerows as well. And they don't tend to grow in around any of the plants that I want to keep, you know, so I don't have to weed those, so I don't hate them.
Yeah, that's true. I love them actually. Yeah. They seem to like slightly dampish, little bit sheltered kind of area, so not out in the vegetable bed.
I suppose they're a woodland flower as well, so the hedgerow would be the remnants of that.
And the bees are quite fond of them.
They are.
So they're very good.
There's a few kind of bee-friendly plants out at the moment, and I saw the bees at the hive. I checked the bees last Sunday, and all hives are doing well, thank God, and they still have some of the stores inside and even some of the kind of fondant I gave them to make up reserves in case they get low around the snow. There's loads of that left. They've hardly touched it. But there's stacks of pollen coming in and out.
I saw pollen coming on mine as well, actually. But I'm sure they've just been waiting for last Sunday to get out. There was a little bit of activity on the Saturday before it, little bit, but a lot of the activity was at the hive. I noticed on Sunday they'd obviously, it was coming back to the hive and stuff. They'd gone off foraging, which is great to see.
If they're bringing in pollen, they say it's, you know, they're feeding the larvae because the pollen loses its effectiveness after a few days. So they don't tend to store that for very long.
Oh, so they've laid already.
Yeah,
then.
So they must have laid and they're bringing on the young.
Very good.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I didn't open it up and go in and inspect and look for queen or anything like that because I thought I'd give them a little bit of a break, get going. But maybe next week I'll do that and go in and mark queens and so on.
Yeah, I think it would have been a pity to kind of disturb them on their first day of sunshine.
But bright yellow pollen was mostly what they were bringing in, and then a kind of like slightly more orange pollen, which I believe is the dandelion. And there are a few dandelions around at the moment.
Oh, okay. Mine are definitely not out yet, but yeah.
There's a few just up on the lawn. I'm not cutting it as short as I used to, so there's a few kind of flowers coming out there.
Okay.
But it's for such a yellow flower, it's amazing. The pollen that comes from that's orange.
Yeah,
it's
and funny. There's some gorse out, I think, now too. So they'll feed on that, won't they?
Oh, they love the gorse. Yeah, they really do. So you made some soup with your wild garlic.
A very simple soup, actually, just potato and wild garlic soup. So I just used like a cup of onion, a cup of potato, another 2 cups of potato, and then really a handful of wild garlic leaves. I had some very good chicken stock from yesterday or from the weekend, so I used that. So it does have quite a chicken-y flavour, actually, I have to say. Not suitable for vegetarians in any shape or form. But the wild garlic, it just gives kind of a nice... a delicate enough flavour to it, actually. You know, a plain potato soup would be a little bit boring and stuff. So for just a handful of leaves and stuff, it does kind of create something different. And it looks quite interesting because you've got the green going through it.
And you're going to pour us out a little bit there?
I will indeed.
And you got this, so you collected all of this in the woodlands down at Dysart. And there's plenty of it down there.
There's lots there, but it's not going to last, you know, it's not going to last another few weeks.
Yeah.
So...
But one way to preserve the wild garlic is obviously you can make some pesto with it, or you can freeze it, the leaves, or you can actually make the soup and then freeze the soup.
That's probably the better idea, really. You can make bread with it too. You could see though where the floods had come up into the woodland, there was all sorts of, on top of the wild garlic, bits of branches and stuff from the river, actually.
And was the flood really bad out there?
It had been, yeah, but it was gone. Now that's been in the flask for a few hours.
Oh, it's a lovely colour, though.
It
really,
is nice,
really
isn't
nice.
It?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, no, that's still perfectly hot. That's lovely. That's absolutely gorgeous. So you could tell there's a lot of potato in there, but you're right, it does have a kind of zingier flavour to it.
Yeah, kind of a fresher
flavour. Yeah, much fresher, much fresher.
But not a mad garlicky flavour either.
No, that's really, really good. And will you give us the ingredients and recipe for that again?
Yeah, so it was just an onion, like a cup of onion, cup of potato, another 2 cups of potato then. So I just sautéed the onion and potato first, then a little bit of pepper and salt, added some stock, use chicken stock or vegetable stock. Then when the potato had softened, then I added in the garlic leaves and I let them just wilt. I didn't leave them stewing in it or anything like that. And then took it off the heat and... pureed it.
Blitz it.
And that's like, it was just minutes, really.
Yeah, really simple.
Collecting the garlic leaves probably what took the longest.
Mm. Kind of reminds me a little bit of, around this time of the year, in another couple of weeks, we might talk to people about nettle soup.
Oh, yes.
But it reminds me of that kind of fresh, you can actually feel it doing you good as as you eat it. But I'm getting that chicken stock there now as well. That's a tasty stock that was in there. There's eating and drinking in that soup, as they say. That's really, really good. Any other kind of food interesting things that you did this week?
No, you know what? It's actually because the weather was nice. I always find I stay out as long as possible, so tend to do much less in the kitchen, and just had a busy time with the kids, actually. So
weren't you talking to me about cheese and herb scones?
Oh yes, well I did make those as well. They were just, you know, as we were going to talk about herbs. They're only a couple of minutes in that. And funny enough, because I learned to make scones so long ago, I always make scones in pounds and ounces.
Oh.
I just haven't converted the scones. Not that I don't know it and stuff, but I still would think of it a pound of... So for cheese and herb scones, I would use a pound of self-raising flour.
It's funny when you were talking about the cup of onion and the cup of potato earlier on. When you, if you look for a recipe online, you come across an American website. I just can't understand their cup measurements at all. Like, how do they deal in that?
Well, you see, it's like I actually was given a set of those cups. I don't think I've ever used them, because it's only for American recipes. But if you're talking about the soup, like a big cup or a small cup, once you're using the same cup for each vegetable, it's fine. So then you're adding in the stock. You just need to know how much stock you need yourself, really. The scones anyway. So it's a teaspoon of salt, 4 ounces of butter, 2 tablespoons of freshly chopped chives, a little teaspoon of mixed herbs, use dried herbs if you like, 9 fluid ounces of milk, 1 egg beaten into the milk, and about 3 to 4 ounces of grated cheddar. So rub the butter into your dry ingredients, your flour and salt and herbs. Then mix in the milk and eggs. Add in your herbs. Knead them up into kind of a dough. And then you want to cut them, you know, flatten them out on a board and then cut them into shapes. I really never, ever, unless I was trying to really impress somebody, cut scones into rounds anymore. Because you cut them into rounds and then you've all the little bits left over and then you've got to make them into something else. So I just cut them into triangles or squares. So make out like a big triangle and then cut it. Works perfectly fine.
Square scones.
Square scones or rectangular scones.
You heard it here first. A more efficient way of doing it.
Much more efficient. You know, all those little scrappy bits?
Yeah.
And scones don't like to be overworked. So by the time you've added all those up, made another couple of scones, and then you've got still bits left over, so some bits of dough have been worked 3 times.
Yeah.
You're not going to have the nicest scone at the end for that last one that's going to look like a big lump of something anyway.
Yes.
So square or rectangular scones.
And how would you serve those now? Because there's a kind of touch of the savoury about them.
Oh, they are savoury. Mm. They would be for soup.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah.
Just butter and served with
soup. A
little
butter, yeah. So just egg wash them into the oven for, I suppose, 15 minutes, depending on the size you're going to cut them.
Brilliant. They sound lovely. And as you were talking about grumbling in the butter into the dry mix, it reminded me that Martha made some more of those rock cakes that we were talking about last week. And she did the entire process herself this time. I had been helping her rub the butter into the dry mix, but nope, she's able to master that
now.
Very good. What she was doing wrong, I think, was throwing in all of the butter at the same time. So obviously it was taking forever to try and crumble.
Yeah.
Little bits at a time, I think, are the way to go with that.
Yeah.
Makes it much easier. We might actually try some of these savoury scones, because I've more of a savoury taste than a sweet taste, I think.
Yeah, sometimes, yeah. I have a savoury and a chocolate taste. But you know, there's different ways to rub butter in. You know the way we do with our fingertips?
Yeah.
Well, I was taught a long time ago, if you put it between the palms of your hands and just rub them quickly, you'll actually break up the butter very quickly.
Oh.
Now, you don't want your hands to be really, really hot, but you're lifting it up out of the bowl and then, you know, put it on one palm and rub very quickly with the other hand. You do the same thing, and if you get used to it, actually it can be quicker.
It's all about exposing as much surface area of the butter as you can so that the flour adheres to it, I suppose.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
And knowing
whichever
when to stop.
Whichever way works easier for you, and that's whichever way you kind of get practiced at, really.
I did, as I was copying out a recipe for Martha, I did come across a great little tip that when you're doing that with the bowl, if you just bang the bowl on the table a couple of times when you think you're finished, if there are any big lumps, they kind of pop to the surface.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, the finer stuff falls down and you're left with these bigger lumps of butter on the top, and it's easier to kind of work them out.
That's a very good tip.
That's an excellent
tip.
Sure, it's worth
today.
Listening to the show for that tip alone. Out at Crowan, we've had a busy week with some more lambs about the place. Absolutely lovely to see them bounding around. You know that four-leg hop that they do? I absolutely love that. So great to see them. And my least favourite ewe, the clever sheep. Called Sheep. I don't like her at all. She's way too intelligent. And whenever you want to put them anywhere, she knows where you want to put them and she goes the opposite direction.
Oh, yes, one of those.
Well, she's continued in the same kind of vein, and the average of girls to boys was brilliant until she had a pair of twin boys. So, bit more rings involved, a bit harder to manage.
Oh, yeah, I was wondering what the problem was with that. Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, I ring them.
Another job
to do. But I just thought it was very typical of sheep to do one more little thing that was just a bit annoying.
And two lambs, though, fair play to them.
Yeah, no, absolutely. The average is very, very good this year. It's nearly twins from everybody, so it's
well,
super.
Going.
Yeah, and guests like to see them in the field as well. And if the weather stays good, the animals might actually start to clean themselves up a bit because they've been covered in muck for weeks and months. And it's not very photogenic. You know, I see families bring their little kids up to the field and they want to take a photograph beside the animals. And then when they get there and they're up close, everything is
and
covered.
And everyone's standing in mud and stuff. I know, I know.
Any sign of the swallows and hedgehog?
No, but there's reports they have landed in the country. So there's been a few sightings already.
They're on their way.
Yeah, and I think they're, and I'm maybe this evening, I don't know, but they're almost here. So.
Right, well, we better take an ad break. And coming up after the ads, we're going to make a phone call all the way down to Dingle, County Kerry. And we're going to be talking to Greta McCarthy O'Brien, who is a horticulturalist and runs a garden centre down there. And she's the author of a gorgeous little book, which I have here in front of me, Greta's Herbs. So we'll be back just after these. Email us on studio@communityradiokilkennycity.ie.
Kitchen Garden is sponsored by the Artisan Food Retailers of Kilkenny.
And welcome back to The Kitchen Garden. I'm Francis Nesbitt and I'm here with Mags Morrissey as usual. And thank you to those who have contacted the shows. I'll get to some of those text messages a little later on, I hope. We're live today, Friday, from 4 to 5, and you can send in your questions or comments. This week, it would be easier actually by email. So kitchengarden@crkc.ie. kitchengarden@crkc.ie. And I'm joined on the phone now from a wet County Kerry, apparently, by Greta McCarthy O'Brien. Greta, how are you?
Hello, how are you, Francis?
Thanks.
Yes, it's bucketing rain here, and I'm actually talking to you from the Polly Tunnel, so I don't know if it's a clear enough line. Can you hear me?
It's
okay?
Perfect. It's perfect. It adds a kind of authenticity to it as well, Greta. We can hear you're out working with the herbs as we speak.
I think we can hear the rain. Can we?
We can. We can hear the rain against the plastic of the Polly Tunnel.
Yeah,
it's lovely and sunny in Kilkenny.
Now we had a fabulous weekend here, but it's kind of, you know, changed again. But
Say you get an awful lot of weather down in Kerry.
Oh, we do. It's the rain and the wind, and you see I'm situated right over the hills in the Atlantic Ocean.
Mm.
So between the wind and the rain, it really is the Wild West here.
But I'm on a sunny day. I've been down in that part of the world, Greta, and on a sunny day, it's beautiful.
Oh yes, it is. It's heaven, heaven in spring and summer. You know, we just have to endure the long winters here, really.
Now, I've been looking through this gorgeous book of yours, Greta. I really, really like it. And there's some lovely photographs. Are most of the photographs taken about your place?
They are actually, yeah. And now he's a wonderful photographer, Rob Beaton. He's a friend of mine. And he's published quite a lot of his own work. He's a rock climber and he does a lot of aerial photography as well. But all of those photographs really are taken here in my nursery. Very, you know, they're authentic, let's say, you know. They're photographing the plants in their natural environment because I want it to be truthful, let's say, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's a really lovely book, Greta's Herbs, Growing Wild in the West of Ireland by Greta McCarthy O'Brien. And I believe there's copies available here in the book centre in Kilkenny.
They'll be there by the weekend, Francis. You know, I'm self-published, so distribution can be a bit of a difficulty for me, really. But
it was a fantastic project to take on, Greta, though, because it's a really, really lovely book at 160 pages, and it's a guide to growing like just about anything anybody would think of on the herb side of things.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you. Yes, I wanted something that was, let's say, really down-to-earth, hands-on. Mm. I mean, there are some wonderful books on herbs out there, but a lot of them, and I'm qualified at it, a lot of them are too technical.
Mm.
And I wanted a book that people could just learn very quickly from and learn the basics, but, you know, with lots of other exciting elements as well as to regard the different varieties.
I really like the tribute that you have at the start of the book to your parents, who taught you to appreciate both nature and mankind. What a lovely sentiment.
Ah, thank you. Yes, I mean, I would have been influenced a lot by my upbringing and my father particularly, you know. So, yeah, exactly, you know. I mean, I plants are my life, but obviously you have to appreciate human beings as well,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And I have children and, yeah, so it was kind of like, yeah, both things have to be balanced, you know?
I love to get the kids involved in my garden and I think the stuff that they find most interesting are plants that they're able to pick and eat, and herbs, of course, are perfect for that. And yes, because they're not very big and they grow quite fast, they're easy for kids to kind of get excited about.
Oh, yeah. Well, you see, I worked with children for 15 years on a school project here, Francis. Mm-hmm. So not giving much away, but I'm working on another book for children.
Ah, very good.
So,
very good.
Yeah, because you are correct there. That's how I became involved. I mean, I was just completely entranced as a child when I first sowed my lettuce and saw the seeds come through, you know. It was just fantastic, you know. And there's lots of fun things children can grow, like peanuts and sunflowers and different things as well, just to catch their imagination, you know.
But it is nice when they're able to pick off a leaf and pop it into their mouth, or, you know, even with the peas or something like
that. Oh, yes. I mean, I found that even with the kids with the herbs, that's what they love. It, you know, they're very sensory plants, so it's kind of like the smell. They love the fragrances and taste in them. Yeah, so...
So now, in the book, Greta, it's kind of it's broken down into, well, there's some beautiful photographs, as we've already mentioned, in there, and a kind of description of each herb as we go along. And then you kind of talk about some of the characteristics that they like as you try to grow them. So some like shady areas, some love the sun. And it's kind of a guide based on the habitat that they like to grow in, is it?
Yeah, that's it. That's the format I use, you know, because I kind of found that with a lot of herb books, you're kind of jumping from one variety to another. So I thought, let's put them in groups, you know. So you'll have the Mediterranean ones who like full sun and well-drained soil. Thereby, you have to add sand. And then you'll have the shady ones, you know, like Lovage and Sweet Sicily. And they will do, and they do very nicely in a very wet, shady location. So I thought to group them is much easier, because if I go out to plan a herb garden for somebody, that's what we have to look at, is grouping them and giving them their requirements. It's actually not that complicated. There's a few basic rules, but once you have the soil and site correct, then, you know, success will follow.
Most of the herbs really are weeds. It's just they've been adapted, or we've adapted them to use in our cooking, and they come from other parts of the world generally.
That's right.
So if
we
just try and provide a bit of what they're used to back where they developed, they'll look after themselves, really, won't they?
Well, that's it. I mean, you think now, like, a lot of people aren't familiar with a herb which I love, is called winter savory. And it's one of the very few ones which will remain available like thyme and bay through the winter. It's an evergreen. Mm-hmm. It grows wild in the mountains in Italy. And it's got a very nice flavour, which is kind of like almost a cross between thyme and rosemary. You know, it's got that kind of Mediterranean spicy flavour.
Yes.
So that's one example of one which we use, which is actually wild in its own, in its own natural habitat. And then you have a lot of the Asian salad herbs, which have become so popular here in the last 10 years, you know, the mizunas and the mustard greens and all of those. And they're very easy to grow from seed, you know. I mean, you might have to look and buy, you know, actually, you know, you might have to look abroad for some of those seeds, you know. Maybe if you can't get them on the shelf in the garden centre, you might have to send off or send to one of the seed companies.
But there's so many online now. And Irish producers as well, not too far from you. I like to use Brown Envelope Seeds down in Cork.
Yes, and Seedaholic are another one.
Seedaholic
like
are super. Yeah,
well.
Really, really good.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And I see in the book, it's not just the kind of green herbs that we'd use. You also talk about edible flowers.
Very
fashionable.
They're very fashionable. That's just it. You have the nasturtium and our violas. And a lot of the, you know, any herb that's edible, really, you can use the flower of, you know, like your garlic flowers. I heard your interview, you were talking about wild garlic. So you could actually use the flowers just in salads for decoration. And, you know, chives.
Yes.
You know, when chives go to flower, when they get to the stage of producing flowers, then the leaves are inedible. But you can just pick off the lovely pink flowers and you can separate them and sprinkle them on your salads or sandwiches or whatever. So yeah, there's lots of kind of creative, imaginative and artistic ways of using the flowers to decorate, you know, dishes.
And there's some other old-fashioned kind of herbs in there as well. I see the tansy getting a mention.
Tansy, yes.
I think I remember references to tansy from Shakespeare. I haven't grown any in... I don't think I've ever grown any tansy, but the flowers are lovely.
You know now, yeah. It's actually... It's extremely resilient. Spreads a lot, but it's got a lovely... It's got a lovely yellow button-type flower, and the beauty of it is the flower is very late in the summer.
Mm.
And it's got a very distinctive... I don't know how you describe the scent, but it's also used to deter, you know, insects. I had a lady and... She had an allergy to, they had a problem with horseflies.
Oh, yeah.
So she came to, she went to the garden centre. They hadn't got it and they sent her to me. And luckily I had a couple of plants that had tansy. So she went off happy with them, whether they worked or not.
Well, horseflies in the summer are a major pest at my place as well. So I may start growing some tansies.
Yeah, well, it'll spread now. You're going to give it maybe, it'll spread to, about 4 or 5 feet spread on one plant.
Right.
And as I said, and the flowers are lovely for cutting. Mm-hmm. It actually holds very well as a cut flower.
Well, that's one I'm going to try this year, I think, for the first time. And I do notice, as well as deterring some kind of houseflies and horseflies, there's some other pests mentioned in the book as well, slugs and snails and the nasty vine weevil. And some tips in there on how to get rid of those.
Yes. Exactly. Now, I didn't, it's really from my hands-on experience. I mean, that's the other thing why I love herbs, because they're not really prone to attack by many pests or diseases, you know, and outside of the salad herbs, you will find that slugs and that won't attack herbs as a general rule.
Mm.
But you will have to mind your salad. You know, if you're sowing any of the Asian greens when they're very little, that's when the slugs can gobble them all up overnight.
Yeah.
But I'm gone back now to using the beer traps, Francis, you know, because I don't need to, I don't need a massive amount of control here because, as I said, they don't attack the herbs. I'm using little containers of beer now. So the slugs are all dying happily.
Yeah, well, they absolutely love the beer, and those traps work really well. Somebody I follow on Twitter, Horty Hugo, is a huge fan of using those as well.
Yeah, I've gone back to them. I use the nematoids as well. You can, and I'll probably have to get some of those in now as well. That's the biological control. You just spray it on, you know?
Works best inside, I think. In a polytunnel, it would be ideal, but outside they tend to get a bit lost. I've never really had any effective use of them.
No, I did now, actually.
Really?
I did, was it last year or the year before? But if the problem with that is you need to make sure the temperature is warm and even.
Right.
If you apply that and the temperature drops, then they're microscopic. They're not going to, they don't work.
Yeah.
They'll die.
Yeah.
So you have to make sure that you don't put it on too early.
Yep.
Probably May would be a better month. But it's pure, it's natural biological control, so it's not classed as a chemical.
Another tip, and the book is full of them. And Greta, you're busy down there. You're doing some courses as well, I believe, and working with some community groups. And you even have people out to your place, and you welcome kind of visitors. Is that right?
Yeah, but by appointment, it's a very small nursery, and I'm not really, a lot of what I do is I deliver out. But I will never turn away any customer, anybody who's interested in herbs. They'll just kindly phone me to make sure I'm here, because I'm kind of a one-woman band, you know, and I do everything myself, and I have deliveries as well to do. So,
because you sell your herbs then in some of the shops and stuff around Dingle.
I do in Dingle. And
busy
just
woman.
On the peninsula. Yeah, I do. And then obviously a lot of the restaurants and chefs will buy from me as well. But I grow, I grow lots of different varieties, but very small quantities.
Mm.
So a lot of people, I have a lot of regular customers, Francis, who I've been supplying for 10 years or more, and they'll give me their order kind of early now. And I grow to order a lot, especially with the, you know, certain things, certain veg and that.
Well, you're certainly a busy woman, Greta, and it's a beautiful book and well done on it. Greta's Herbs, Growing Wild in the West of Ireland. It's available in the Book Centre here in Kilkenny from this weekend. And, of course, you can get more information on the book and on Greta on gretasherbs.com. Is that the best place for people to go, Greta?
It is, yeah. And I've got various events coming up, Francis, where I'm going to be working with some chefs.
Oh, very good.
And those events are where they're combined workshops where I actually talk about growing and then the chef does a demo uses the herbs.
And where are they coming up, Greta?
I've one in the Castle Gregory Book Festival on the 21st of April with Travis L. Gleeson. He did the book on chef and Dingle Dinners. And then I have one with Mark Murphy in the Dingle Cookery School on the Maybank holiday weekend, and another one at the Listowel Writers weekend with Nourished by Nature. That's Sid Sheehan. He's a chef and nutritionist. This is for me, I suppose, a little branching out, let's say, because normally I would just do my workshops on my own, but I like to work with chefs because I learn from them and they learn from me.
And sure, you needed something else to do to fill all of those spare hours that you have, Greta.
Well, the winter is the problem. The winter is so quiet. And then the summer, it's kind of like 24/7. You know, yeah. You just have to pack it all in and literally make hay while the sun shines.
Well, well done and congratulations.
Grow herbs while the sun shines.
And congratulations again on the lovely book, Greta. And gretasherbs.com is where you can get more information on that. Greta, thank you very much for joining
us. Thank you very much, Franz. And for sale off the website as well, Franz.
Lovely.
You know?
That's great.
Thank you.
Okay, all the best,
thank
Greta.
You.
It's a lovely book and it's nice to be talking to another part of the country and hear actually that we're faring a bit better than them weather-wise.
Actually, it sounds like a great book.
It is, yeah. It's a really nice little book. It's only €15 as well.
I might be tempted to get one.
Some lovely, lovely photos in there. It would make a nice little gift, actually, for somebody who's thinking about getting into gardening for the first time. And a few tips even for the more seasoned gardener as you go through it. And like I found the tansy, there are some herbs in there that you just wouldn't really think of. So
I'm
that's
sure.
how I found it.
You know, when you get into the habit of growing the same ones, I have the same kind of... my teenager actually is doing... her home economics practical this week for her junior cert, and she has to make quiche, and it's salmon and dill quiche.
Oh, very
and
nice.
And she went, we don't have any dill, so she went to the shop to buy dill, and she came back with a packet of what said dill, but it was actually sage.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So she made quiche with salmon and sage.
Sage.
It was actually unusual, but it was okay. She won't do it for the exam.
Right.
But she didn't know.
Isn't that funny?
What, you know, and there's piles of sage in the garden. Mm. And she doesn't take a lot of interest in that. But she went on what it said. Now, in fairness, it should have been dill in it. But so it's useful to know what these things look like, isn't it?
It really is. Yeah. Don't always read the, or don't always trust the label.
No.
I actually meant to ask Greta while I had her on the line there. The one herb that I fail with consistently is coriander. I just cannot grow coriander without it going to seed instantly.
Yeah, I've had that problem as well, actually.
I must have a look through the book again to see if there's any tips on...
I kind of gave up on it, actually, because you'd have loads of it and then 2 days later it's all gone.
Yeah, it's all gone to seed. I generally buy the little flower pot full of coriander now in the supermarket.
Yeah.
They tend not to last too long, but at least you have it there when you need it.
You get maybe 3 or 4 days.
I tried splitting those and planting them on, but they just don't like it. As soon as I put them anywhere near my soil, they tend to bolt.
Oh, okay.
Right, now we have lots more herb kind of chat coming up. We're going to be talking shortly to Delia Lowry-Larkin about using herbs as a therapy here in Kilkenny at Nora Therapies. But we better take an ad break first, and then we'll give Delia a call after that.
Okay,
so we'll be back just after these. Email us on studio@communityradiokilkennycity.ie.
Kitchen Garden is sponsored by the artisan food retailers of Kilkenny.
And you're very welcome back to The Kitchen Garden. I'm Francis Nesbitt and I'm here with Mags Morrissey. And thank you to those who have contacted the show. We'll get to some of those text messages a little later on. We're live today, Friday from 4 to 5, and you can send in questions or comments by text to 086
353-7782 or by phone on 776-2777. If you're listening to a repeat of the show on Monday afternoon, please don't bother texting us as we won't get to see your message, but you can still email us anytime at kitchengarden@ckc.ie, kitchengarden@ckc.ie. Now, I'm joined on the line by
Delia Lowry-Larkin, Noor Therapies at the Holistic Centre on William Street. Delia, thank you very much for joining us on the show.
You're welcome.
Delia, we've been talking a lot about herbs today and how to grow them, and every week some herb or other is mentioned as part of a recipe on the show, but your various experiences and careers have led you into the realm of herbalism and using herbs as medicinal treatments. Could you tell us a little about how you came to be working as a herbal therapist here in Kilkenny?
Like, I have a background in biochemistry from NUI Galway, and so be very much part of the scientific field. And one of the things that really came up of interest to me was herbalism, because, you know, the general plants that we have growing around us on an everyday basis are fantastic sources of not only like our vitamins and minerals, but they also have medicinal benefits for us in our bodies, and they can help our bodies maintain a balance, you know. And it can actually get quite scientific, you know, if you really want to get down to the biochemistry and the phytochemicals of herbs. So kind of it was just a... there's a side of things that made me kind of go, ooh, I think this would be interesting, you know, challenge my brain a bit further. So that's how I got into it.
And of course, you're not the first person to start using herbs as therapy. We've been doing it for as long as we've been humans, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the oldest records, I think, goes back to the Ming Dynasty, because he actually put a ruling out that under no circumstances was any medicinal info or their manner in which they medicinally treat people, like they're sacred, you're not allowed to destroy them. So it's one of the longest standing records that I'm aware of. And then I think you're looking at Ayurvedic medicine as well, where herbs were used as well from a physical, mental, spiritual and emotional side point of view. Western herb-wise, our history is really, really deep. And technically, actually, the Irish history is massive, absolutely massive. Like, for example, just going down to Rose House, there's a herb garden in Rose House that was there for a long time, and unfortunately a lot of the information isn't available to us due to our history and the destruction of many books. So most of our Irish herbal knowledge is knowledge that's been passed down from our grandmothers and, you know, grandparents, aunts, uncles, so and so forth, on things, you know, oh, you got a bit of toothache, get a bit of clove for that, you know, or, you know, little things, that these tidbits of information that they have.
So what we might call old wives' tales.
Yeah, the old wives' tales. Mm. And I know currently there's a lot of scientific work being put in to prove the old wives' tales, even so far as to pharmacologically. They, you know, for example, they look at calendula. We know that calendula cream is fantastic for burns and for dry for skin. And like the pharmacological industry is looking at what properties within the calendula that they can use and therefore use in their creams, and can they synthetically make these things, you know. And I suppose from a herb point of view, as much as it's great to see all this invested interest and research being done, we as a majority and as a collective would argue that herbs work synergistically within the body, and taking one particular aspect of a herb doesn't necessarily bode that well because of the synergistic effect that is used, you know. And I suppose my best example would be something like dandelion leaf. You know, we all see the dandelions out on the lawn and the lovely yellow flowers, and currently, like in the last month or two, there would have been that mass thing of, you know, save the dandelions, don't cut them, save our bees.
Yes.
But like dandelion leaf, they help with water retention, with oedema, and you know, there's many medications that are out there to help with that. But dandelions are fantastic in the respect that not only do they help your kidneys with releasing water and strengthen them, but they don't fatigue your kidneys. They give you the minerals. They give the kidneys the minerals that they need. So, like, you know, the need for potassium. They're fantastic, really, really high in potassium. They're going to... you're not going to, when you urinate, you're losing potassium out of your body, where they replace the potassium, which you know, is just amazing. They not only help the organ, they strengthen it, but they help it to efficiently do its job. and once again, we create a balance.
And your work, Delia, would generally you be a greater fan of prevention or treatment with your clients?
I would be inclined to go and say I would be a greater fan of prevention.
Right.
I would love if people kind of said, you know, I notice every year I get a cough. What do I need to do to prevent myself from getting a cough?
Very
you know,
good.
How can I strengthen my body? But like that, you know, prevention is ultimately the key. But people do come in and they say, I've got a sore throat.
Mm.
You know, what should I do? You know, I don't want to go on antibiotics, or it's just a scratchy throat. It's not quite an infection just yet. Can you help me?
Mm.
And that would be something one of my favorite go-tos would be sage tea, which I know you're doing the Kitchen Herb Show. So like sage would be something you'd often see in your foods, you know, especially at Christmas time, if you were kind of making your sage stuffing. But taking fresh sage, ripping it up and putting it in a cup with hot water, amazing. Absolutely amazing for looking after the mucosal membranes in your throat. Really nice and warming for your digestive system. Like in so many ways, it's just like, I mean, count the benefits, you know what I mean?
I'm going to try that. I'm a big fan of sage as a herb and I use it in cooking all the time. But I never would have thought of making a tea with it. So I'm going to try that.
And can I ask, how long would you have your sage tea for? Let's say you had a sore throat.
Yes. Okay, so I know there about like a week ago, I got up one morning and my throat was really scratchy and on the verge of being sore. Like I don't have any tonsils left at the moment, so I'd say if I had my tonsils, they would have been a bit swollen. So I'd have made a pot of sage tea and I'd let it brew for about 5 minutes. It's quite fragrant and quite strong, and that's something like our Western society aren't used to the bitter taste.
Mm.
So it's a bit unusual, and most people kind of throw an owl face when they take it. But within one cup, I had one cup and my throat was already feeling better.
Wow.
And, you know, and that sounds kind of like, aha, is that all in the head? But genuinely, my throat felt better. My voice was stronger. The scratchiness was gone out of it. And I think, you know, you add into that, like the warmth of a cup of tea also. It was helping. I personally have, over the years of doing herbal medicine, tried my best not to sweeten with honey and things like that. But if you so wish and you can't handle the taste of it, a bit of honey is grand to pop in your cup of tea.
To help the medicine go down, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Help the medicine go down. A spoonful of sugar. But like sage, for example, like I said, sore throat, it's really good for treating a cold, a cough, and even diarrhea. Like if you're experiencing diarrhea, it helps your digestive system to kind of relax and to astringe the watery stool that is in there, you know, so to help you get through it. And fantastic for any sort of staphylococcus infection. Even sage tea, if you put it topically on a wound, like if you get a bad cough or some bad cut or graze, you can use that to clean the wound out. So many fantastic.
And that's something, as I was doing some research for this slot, I did notice on your site that you talk about not just teas as a means of kind of dispensing the herbal medicines, but there's also tinctures and powders and creams and salves for topical use as well.
For topical use. So the tinctures would be used mostly internally. I also do massage therapy, but I use one called Viburnum Opulus, and its common name is cramp bark.
Oh, yeah.
And I use it topically on people that are having like really bad back pain and spastic muscles, and it helps relax the muscles. You can use tinctures as powders can be used. If somebody is intolerant to alcohol, be it they choose not to drink, be it they were previously an alcoholic, or be it they were a child who wouldn't be able to deal with an alcoholic tincture, but powders can be used, and you get a slightly gentler but just an equal in effect. Powders can also be used in poultices, like that. You can use fresh, you can use dried herbs. Salves and oils are fantastic from a topical use because they keep a little bit better. You know, they keep, and you feel the emollient action from the oil as well. You know, your skin won't feel as dry. But to do something like that would be like, for example, I suppose like using calendula. I'll go back to calendula for the sake of it. And calendula, you can take the petals of calendula and infuse the oil. And there's two ways of doing that. You can put them in a jar and leave it on the windowsill and have a solar infusion, which is using the sun, the heat of the sun.
Yep.
you can put them in oil in a bain-marie, which would be essentially like using a saucepan and putting a bowl on top. So the water is heating the bowl itself, thereby heating the oil and helping to extract the active constituents.
So it's a gentle heat to the oil rather than direct heat.
Not simmering or boiling, just a very gentle heat. And that could be for the guts of maybe 2 hours just to fully extract. And some people even do cold infusions, you know, with the oil or with water, for example.
Or they can go to you, Delia. Would you prepare these for people?
I prepare these for people. Yeah. And I make the creams, poultices, things like that. And I have tinctures, ready-made tinctures from a really good company in England. And there's one here in Ireland, also up in Sligo. And use those. And I don't use powders that much now, personally. And it'd be more a case of if I felt that, you know, if somebody was going through a particular extensive treatment, that I would look at using powders. But they're always an option.
There's a long list of conditions which I saw listed on your website that you feel your herbal treatments can help. So everything from allergies, eczema, anxiety, digestive issues, which you've already mentioned, high blood pressure, headaches, chronic fatigue, all the way through to arthritis, even depression and stress-related conditions.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, ultimately, herbs were the originating medicinal thing, and all medical tablets that you now receive ultimately have came from the knowing and wisdom and old wise tales. So they would have been the original properties that would have been used to make our current day medicine. So they are equally as effective. They're very, very gentle, genuinely very gentle, but I mean the effects are fantastic. Like, I mean, everybody knows the renowned effect of St. John's wort, which the Latin for is Hypericum preferatum. And Hypericum, yes, it's fantastic for lifting your mood, but people, like, it's a fantastic digestive aid. Help your body digest your food and assimilate it. It's fantastic to help your liver clear itself, and that's actually where mood-altering effects come from, and they enhance the mood due to its effect on the liver and one of the detox pathways within the liver. It can treat such a range, and like that, when you go to a herbalist, they individualize the treatment for you, and whatever is the predominant issue for you would be the one that would be mainly treated. But going through a full consultation, they'd understand, you know, okay, yeah, maybe you actually have quite a weak immune system, or maybe your digestive system isn't up to scratch.
And Delia, you and I need to speak again, and on a one-on-one kind of therapy for me, I think, but we'll definitely love to have you back on the show to talk about this in some more detail, because it really is fascinating stuff. But Delia, we've run out of time for today, unfortunately, but people can get in touch with you, Noor Therapies at the Holistic Centre on number 7 William Street.
That's
in Kilkenny.
Correct,
And you're on Facebook, facebook.com/ Noor Therapies.
Yeah.
And Delia Lowry Larkin, thank you very much for joining us on the show today.
You're welcome. Thank you very much for having me.
That's really fascinating stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, she's great, actually.
Super. We definitely have to have Delia back on sometime.
I feel I need Delia.
Yeah.
I only need Delia, maybe, actually.
Maybe once a month we could pick a therapy and talk about it and how we can sort ourselves out and sort listeners out too.
Something I discovered recently actually is fennel leaf tea.
Oh.
Yeah, really nice if you're just feeling a bit unsettled in yourself or anything like that. A nice cup of tea going to bed at night.
A fennel leaf tea?
Yeah.
And is that available in little tea bags or do you...
Yeah. I did buy it in tea bags, yeah.
Okay, I must look into that. I love fennel on my pork, and I had delicious pork wrapped in fennel seeds last weekend. That's how I generally take in my fennel.
Okay, you can have a cup of tea after your pork if you wished, or it might be overdoing it at that stage.
Now,
I think it would have a different effect, really, the fennel seeds on your pork and the tea.
We're running out of time again this week, and I want to leave listeners with a little piece of music, which I think is very appropriate to the theme that we've had all about herbs and so on today. But there are some jobs to do outside. The ground is drying up, so if you haven't planted your spuds yet, get the spuds in now. And your daffodils, if there are any seed heads developing on some of the early daffodils, you can pick those off, but of course leave the foliage alone for at least 6 weeks before you cut it back, so that the plant has a chance to build up its stores in the bulb for next year. And it's time to get sowing some other stuff now. So wildflowers, sow some wildflower seeds in trays or modules, and then you can plant those out in the lawn or around the edges of the lawns. Check your bees when you get a chance, if you have them, and continue to feed the birds, I think, for the moment, because it is a bit of a hungry gap for those. And in the greenhouse or the polytunnel, it's time to start checking the new shoots on your plants for aphids and try and get on top of any infestations before they start. And of course, plant some herbs. Wouldn't that
Lots
be a nice thing to do
yes,
this week?
Absolutely.
Great. Well, thank you very much for joining us again on The Kitchen Garden. We'll be back next week, next Friday, live from 4 to 5. And the show is repeated on Monday from 4 to 5 too. You can keep in touch with us during the week on Twitter at NesbittF or Mags is at Mags Morrissey, or email us anytime, kitchengarden@crkc.ie. And today we're going to leave you with a song. You probably could have guessed what it is, actually. It's Simon and Garfunkel and Scarborough Fair. Parsley, sage, rosemary and thyme. We'll be back next week.
Are you going to Scarborough Fair? Parsley, sage, rosemary and thyme. Remember was a true love of mine. Tell her to make me a cambric shirt, a deep forest green, parsley, sage, rosemary and thyme, and snow-crested brown, without no sleep or night and work. Sleeps on the wing of a clarion call. Tell her to find me an acre of land, a sprinkling of me, parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme. Strands and polishes of gun, she'll be a true love of mine. Tell her to reap it in a sickle billows blazing in scarlet battalion. Parsley, sage, rosemary, and girls born in the soldiers to kill. And was a true love of mine. to make me a cambric shirt,
a deep forest green,
parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme, and snow-crested brown, without no seam or needle,
and workers, the child of romance,
and she'll be a true love of mine.
Strands and polishes of gun,
she'll be a true love of mine. Tell her to reap it in a sickle bill of blazing in scarlet battalion.
Parsley, sage, rosemary, and girls born in the soldiers to kill.
Once was.